And we could probably add 5 or 6 additional goals onto the list. But we all agree that these 13 goals are worthwhile. We want our students to have them all. You're paying enough tuition dollar to be able to get all of these goals. But there's one thing your tuition dollar cannot purchase, and that's more time in a day. And therefore, we're not going to be successful, despite all of our interest in achieving all of these goals. It's not going to be possible. So we need to have realistic goals. Where would you draw the line? Again, assuming that this list is in order, assuming that this list is accurate, where would you suggest that we draw the line? And he suggested that we draw the line after number 8. That we draw the line after number 8. And again, we could debate this, and when I do this with my students in school, this is exactly what we do. I go around the room and I ask them where they would draw the line. And I didn't bring with me, but I have the results. I saved them from year to year because they're fascinating. And I compare one year's group of students to a different, and I look to see for trends. So over the last 15 years, to see if there are any trends. There's the student from Australia who draws the line after number 1 and says that's the main goal. We want people to walk out of education feeling positive. As an aside, this was mentioned as the main goal. It was at a question-answer session we did yesterday in Camp Shabbat when one of the boys asked, he's teaching Ada Hay kids, which are 10-year-olds, I guess, 9-year-olds, and said, what should my goal be when I'm teaching them? So the rabbi who was sharing the Q&A with me, that was his message. The goal should be they walk out of the summer having positive feelings about Torah learning. It's a goal. It's a suggestion. And other people in my classrooms always say, no. They're kids, remember. 13, we're not idealistic. We want everything just like we said. But let's assume, for argument's sake, that we're willing to cut the list at number 8, which is certainly, on the Lipstein side, was the majority view. Number 8, we want to at least make sure that they're prepared to devote time post-graduation to continue the Jewish learning in a formal environment. However, if they have the language skills to decode classical Jewish texts, critical thinking skill to appreciate uniqueness and significance of those texts, ability to analyze text and offer their own suggestions and to be able to prepare and then deliver a Torah. These are all goals, and again, we want them all. But it's not possible in 24 hours a day, in 38 minutes in a classroom, in 180 days of school, with all of the other branches on the menorah that we have to do as well, it's just not possible. So the suggestion is that we cut it off after number 8, knowing that it would be lovely if we could get more. But if you were on the school board, you would be very happy if you cut it off at 8 if we were able to achieve those. I'm happy to see there are some nodding heads in the no direction. But this was the suggestion on the site. Someone then responded, maybe it was you, someone then responded and said, well, let's work with an analogy. And that analogy here, if you could pass that around, the analogy is in what our demands are and what our goals are for our secular education in the very same school. What should be our goals in our secular, in our very same school? And as they're going around, I'll read them because I just enjoy reading them so much. 1, graduates should have positive feelings about their American identity. 2, graduates should be open to continue to explore that sense of American identity beyond their formal schooling. 3, graduates should be committed to the fundamental values of democracy and justice. 4, graduates should know how to function as active participants in their American communities and institutions. 5, graduates should be committed to function as active participants in their American communities and institutions. That sounds like a typo. Graduates should be committed to a life of good citizenship and allegiance to the law. 7, graduates should appreciate, my favorite, should appreciate the value of continued learning and be committed to incorporate some form of learning, be it lectures, tapes, or educational television, into their adult lives. And 8, graduates should be prepared to devote time post-graduation to continue their learning in a formal environment. This was the comparison that was made. I share with you the response. Before I share the response, let me share the original post and then the response. The original post. I'm glad to see that the issue of functional illiteracy among yeshiva graduates has been raised. Having been involved in 4 very different yeshiva high schools over the past 2 decades, I have no doubt that a significant portion of yeshiva high school graduates are functionally illiterate, if we define it as the ability to read a passage from Ramban's Torah commentary or a Daf Gemara. The question I pose is what should be a realistic expectation for students studying complex texts in a non-native language and what the goals of a yeshiva education should be. If I were to use math as an analogy, the goal of a high school education is not to produce mathematicians, but to introduce the field of higher mathematics to the broader population. Give the students the fundamental tools to which they can explore math on a higher level should they choose to, and provide the inspiration so that some students will indeed pursue advanced mathematics. I suspect that the survey of high school graduates who have no intention of pursuing a course of study which requires advanced mathematical skills will retain much more than rudimentary algebra and a little geometry. Were we to apply the same standard to other subjects, such as the history or science, as history or sciences, I believe that we would find the results similar. This, of course, despite the fact that these subjects are being taught in the native language. Despite this, I don't believe we would consider these students as being functionally literate in these areas, because for the masses, there is no realistic expectation that these students would have mastered these skills. Honestly, how many of the LookJet readers remember the difference between molarity and molality, and how to determine the height of a building using trigonometry? The analogy of the Midrash Kodesh is fairly clear, despite the obvious differences, etc., etc., etc. In light of the above, we must revisit the question of what are the reasonable goals of yeshiva education. And I believe the answer must be formulated on a scale with higher goals reserved for the more intellectually gifted students. What follows is my very rough draft, which some may see as a challenge, and I invite online discussion, basically as I said. What was the response to this? We'd be glad that the graduates were productive citizens and not hoodlums, if you use the analogy to the second half. We'd be glad that the graduates were productive citizens and not hoodlums, to be sure. But we'd look for another principle. And the question is, what demands are we making on our own children, on our own students, on our principals, on our educators, on our school boards, or whatever the infrastructure is? What demands are we making on their Torah education? And are we demanding equivalent, maybe not exactly the same, maybe our goals are different, but are we demanding equivalent standards as we make that scale, again, debating within nuance of what that scale should be? Are we making the same claims or are we not? And I'll just read a couple other snippets here that I think will illustrate this point before we can talk about some solutions. There's a yeshiva kadosha in my neighborhood, again, whoever's running this, there's a yeshiva kadosha, I should pronounce that correctly, there's a yeshiva kadosha in my neighborhood that has a regents track to accommodate those parents who have not yet been convinced that there's no real value in having a high school diploma in our society. They study English literature in class from cliff notes, not the original text. They're being prepared to be able to discuss the book on the regents exam without wasting time on reading the book itself. It would be a mistake to assume that this disdain for the text is not being conveyed to students who are told that they can discuss Chumash without access to the original text. Of course, the original teacher who posted the original thing would prefer interesting discussions to drill in reading and grammar. Who wouldn't? But he's in this fix because all the teachers before him had the same attitude. What would he do if he found that discussions in his English literature class were based on Wishbone, a great elementary school TV show that introduces young children to famous books by way of a talking dog, because the students couldn't read the books under discussion? Or if he found that the students in his math class were discussing logical proofs but couldn't add fractions, I would hope that he would address the real deficiency. Unfortunately, from where I sit, and thank God I sit in a place that is pretty much devoted to textual study, and the students that come to us are decently proficient before they come, that's the full disclosure. However, from where I sit, I see that in our society, even in our decently text-focused society, and I'm speaking in TNEC, so TNEC is, thank God, already a notch above on some level on this. However, are we making the same demands of ourselves, of our students, and of our schools towards textual study? And as the culture in general around us, Rabbi Pruzanski spoke earlier about the challenges of educating students in our culture, we are living in a culture that has a disdain for text. At best, our society is grade test focused. We're very much vocationally focused. Perhaps that's the economy driving that we're concerned for our children, that they need to be able to have a parnassa. And having a parnassa in American society means having degrees. And having degrees means going to a good institution of higher learning. And to be able to get accepted into an institution of higher learning, one has to have that straight A transcript. And not only do you have to have the straight A transcript, one also has to have every other extracurricular under the book, because the colleges are not only looking for the transcripts, they're looking for the rounded student, because they have 15,000 applicants for 1,000 spaces, and therefore we can't just look at their grades, because everybody's grade point average is the same, and therefore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, the last priority, no matter how religious our homes are, unfortunately, seems at times to be the Torah study. And then when it comes to Torah study, what's our goal? Our goal simply becomes that we keep our kids from, which is an understandable goal in our society, where that is, of course, the challenge as well. But then what happens is we start from a very young age and we're not training our students, perhaps, to actually study the text. And then they go to college. And they go to college and they're studying physics and they're studying science, and they're doing that in high school as well, and they start to realize that their Torah education is still Bible stories that they learned in kindergarten, and they haven't been able to master the same analytical abilities that they're being trained to do in equations and math or in quantum physics, and their Torah education still becomes the story of Adam and Chava in the Garden of Eden. And then, when you have that disdain for text, it leads, in my humble opinion, to a disdain for our Masorah. I teach halakhic process in MMY. I can tell you, after 12 years of yeshiva education, and I teach some of the strongest women students that come to Israel, they know nothing. Absolutely nothing. They're keeping halakha without understanding in the slightest about why or how halakha works. There's perhaps an innate emunah, which is a beautiful thing, and we shouldn't lose that. But when it comes to textual study, as the society continues, in my opinion, it seems to be getting weaker and weaker. Teachers are trained to become entertainers. If you do not entertain your class, if you try to educate your class, and you don't stand up there and you're not a rock star, you will not have students. And therefore, the pressures that come from the institutions that hire those teachers, because everything is bang for your buck, so therefore they have to entertain, and it's so much easier to entertain with a hashkafic discussion, with a tangent, etc., than actually teaching the text. And therefore, this discussion, again, you can find the larger discussion on the Lookstein Lookjed, L-O-O-K-J-E-D. You can Google that, Lookjed, etc., and see the discussion at large. The question is, what are we supposed to do about it? What role as parents and as community members do we play in trying to make sure that the same standards that we have in our secular studies are, in fact, the same standards that we have in our Torah study, and that we can sit around the room and not this when the question is posed? Which, unfortunately, halavai that everybody would be saying no. There are schools of thought out there that don't agree with this whole premise and think that, no, the most important part is number one. We have to make sure that our children remain religious. I want to suggest a few suggestions. If I have been successful at presenting the problem, and if, on the assumption that we agree that it's a problem, then the question is, thank you very much, Rabbi Katz, but what solutions are there? So, at 6 a.m. this morning, I brainstormed, right on time, I brainstormed eight solutions. They're not solutions, but bricks to solutions, and I want to share them, and then I want to leave time for comments and questions, so we're still doing okay. First of all, I think we have to recognize this is a long-term project, and when I suggest solutions, I'm not suggesting that tomorrow morning anybody changes their high school, anybody changes their elementary school, anybody changes the communities in which they work. That's not a realistic goal. This is being fueled by a general thing in the culture and the society in which we live, and you can't change a culture overnight. So first of all, we need to recognize that it is a long-term project. It is not a problem in particular of this institution or another institution, and to be honest, it's not a problem in Jewish society either. This is a problem in overall society, that the standards of text and study, any of the adults in the room can remember how they used to do a research project for, I don't know, for their history class. Index cards, the library, books off a shelf, and now kids, thank God, are very proficient at cut and paste, Googling cut and paste, but cutting and pasting and Googling doesn't train for analytical skills that we can then transfer over. So it's a problem in general society. So number one, goal number one, I think, in fact, this is actually not goal one, this is solution one, this is solution zero. The premise to all of this is that this is a long-term project. Number one, because it is a long-term problem, and we're trying to change a culture, and we're trying to change a culture within a larger culture, I think that the most important thing that we can do is check and double-check the subliminal messages that we send our children. Simply, we don't have to change anything, but the language that we speak and the messages that we send. And I'll just give you one or two quick examples. I was very happy to see this morning when I was eating my bagel at breakfast, and I had no doubt because it's Shani Tarragon, so etc., but I wouldn't have thought of this in my own terms also. She's the keynote speaker at a conference. I was very happy to see that the first thing that I received was a source sheet. And she referred to that source sheet, without referring to the source sheet, I just want to point out, if we think about the class that she gave, if I want to critique it, so to speak, she didn't read the sources, except for the original Gemara. They were all there for the taking, and they were translated Aramaic, Hebrew, into English, etc., but there was a source sheet on the table, even though, in the end, she didn't really refer to it. You could have listened to that exact mini-shear without anything in front of you. But subliminally, you received the source sheet. And that made her presentation night and day different than just a nice little speech, etc. Not to mention that I think you would actually remember it better than had it just been down before she. But I digress. But the subliminal message that our Masorah is based in text. Everything that we do, even if I'm not going to refer to it right now because it's not the time and place, but is text-based, sends a message to our children. And if we start that process of the subliminal message to our children in utero, the day they're out, it's a source sheet, and I'm exaggerating, but the concept is still the concept. I think we're looking at a different world. Again, slow, we're changing the culture. It may take another 100 years, but we're in this for the long game. Subliminal messages. The way we even speak when we answer questions. I know that every time I get asked a question by a student, I always try to refer to a source, pull a book off the shelf, or something along those lines. Not in the room, right? I got asked by a student up in camp yesterday a question about something that was taking place in camp. I could have easily just responded, that was a power outage. Okay, no problem. I could have responded simply with a mutar or an asur. That would have been a very simple answer to a very simple question. I did not respond that way. I said, this is actually a major discussion. And I didn't have the books in front of me right when I got asked the question, so I quickly mentioned, I seem to recall there's a debate in Shulchan Aruch, it's based on a Gemara in Brachos somewhere, etc., etc. And then 10 minutes later, I actually went, pulled a Mishnah Berurah off the shelf, went back to her 2 hours later and said, by the way, Reish Lamed Gimel and Reish Lamed Hey, actually Reish Lamed Hey, which references Reish Lamed Gimel. Now, I don't know if she will actually remember what I said, and I don't know if she will even have the time to look it up. It doesn't really matter. I referenced it. I sent a subliminal message to my student that it isn't just us or mutter, but it's a text. It's a sugya. And every sugya, by definition, therefore, is a discussion, change of culture. So that would be another example. And therefore, number one, subliminal messages, how we answer questions, source-based demands, which is also subliminal. Everything should be referenced. Again, it's a suggestion. When we answer questions again from day one, even if the kid doesn't know what the source is yet, we send a message to our children that it's source-based. Three, and this is now for our schools. Tracks. Not every student should be learning text on the same level, and perhaps not every student should be learning text at that time. Subliminal messages, yes, but not every student is going to be going that way. But a track, a text track, where kids are being exposed for those that are interested, for those that are capable, that track needs to be available. And again, I don't know the local schools. I'm not sure that in every school in our community, something like that is available. And there's a reason for that. Kids aren't necessarily interested. And again, edutainment, we are responding to what's going to work with our students. So my fourth message is that those extra tracks, especially if they're extracurricular and they're outside of school, need to be incentivized. Call it a bribe. So we're not going to call it a bribe because that could be a different educational session, but we'll call it incentivized. For example, if it's a curricular track, so it doesn't have to be incentivized, that wouldn't work well in a school. But if it was an extracurricular track, let's say on a Sunday morning or something like that, why would any kid give up their Sunday morning? So it needs to be incentivized. It's no different than giving candy to the kids in shul. That minhag somehow seems to still exist. So we're not opposed to incentivizing our children. So some kind of incentivizing food is always a great incentive. Or something like that, but even if it's an extracurricular textual something, there should be some incentive to actually get the kids interested in going. But it also sends a message to our students that this is a priority for us. We understand that it's not for everyone. We understand that not every, but we're putting our money where our mouth is, even if the money in this case is candy, and we're suggesting that this is a higher value that if you can ascribe to, and you can aspire to, we're into that. School boards. There's no question in my mind that there's an issue of supply and demand. And if there's no demand, there isn't going to be supply. We need to be demanding, again, in my humble opinion, from the boards of our schools, that there be an emphasis, again, in the right doses for the right kids, tracks, etc., but that there be a demand for textual study. If there is not a demand coming from the parent body, it does not happen. I know how schools work. And I defer again to any particular school because I don't teach in this neighborhood. However, all schools are focused based on the needs of their parents. The same way, the demands of parents for extracurricular activities, because that's what college wants, gets those extracurricular activities to happen. It is the parents that are driving the schools, not the other way around, as was heard earlier. And we have to remember that as parents. And therefore, the parents need to rally around in terms of a goal system about what we expect from our schools. The school will respond. We don't have the teachers. There's teacher training. We have to, etc. And again, supply and demand. If there's enough demand, kids, when they go to study and when they decide to go into education, will be interested in textual study if that's going to get them the job. If that's not going to get them to the job, if it's that the high school is only hiring the most dynamic, creative, etc., which is also important, then that's where the demand is going to be, and that's where the supply is going to come from. So again, if there is demand, we'll be able to provide the teachers. I'll tell you one short snippet. Everybody complains that in Israel, many of us stopped really doing Hebrew immersion and teaching most of our classes in Hebrew. When I went to yeshiva, when I went to seminary, I learned all of my classes in Hebrew, and I had Israeli roommates, and I had this and this, etc. And it was all true at the time, and it no longer happens. Why does it no longer happen? Because kids aren't interested. So when you get together at an education conference, So we, for example, the schools in Israel, I once got attacked by an elementary school principal who said to me, the reason we're not teaching our kids Hebrew anymore is because you're not sending us teachers. So I said, I'm not sending you teachers because the high schools aren't sending me kids that can learn in Hebrew. I go back to the high school and I say, hey, high school, you know, you are not sending me kids that are interested in learning Hebrew, so I can't teach Hebrew. And guess what the high school says? The elementary school isn't sending. And we've got a vicious cycle. And until we break that vicious cycle, none of this is going to change. That was Hebrew. This is text. They're similar in that regard. Supply and demand. Sooner or later, that cycle has to be broken, and I think that has to come from the grassroots of the parents. Number seven. High schools will also tell you that they cannot provide extra textual study beyond the mainstream of their schools because everything works in blocks. So if I pull four kids and I put them in a separate track, I need a teacher for four kids. And then not only do I need a text teacher for their Limudei Kodesh for those four kids because of the way the scheduling works up, I now need a separate teacher for them for physics because the physics lines up with the Chumash, etc. I don't run a high school. I don't run an elementary school. I do not pretend to be able to understand the problems and the challenges of blocks. I accept it. That having been said, supply and demand. If it was a priority and it was a goal, I venture to guess that that problem would be solved. So again, I put the onus of responsibility on us, the parents, and on the community. And finally, before I open up for comments or questions, women. Again, I teach women, so that's why this is near and dear to my heart. And perhaps in this crowd, this is not the issue, but it is an issue in other crowds, so I'll mention it. Very nice text, textual study, textual analysis, pull out your thumb, in particular Torah Sheba'al Peh, where it's more pronounced, etc. Okay, for boys, I hear that. But for girls, we need to teach them Emunah, we need to teach them Jewish history, we need to teach them Hashkafa, maybe we need to teach them Halakha, they need to know what to do in their homes, etc. But text, they don't necessarily need to learn. That is certainly a Hashkafat HaChayim that is out there, even if it is not the Hashkafat HaChayim in this room. Again, I don't know who I'm speaking to and who I'm not, but I know Tina. So I'm willing to venture to guess that I'm preaching to the choir. However, on the assumption that I'm not preaching to the choir, my response to that it is short-sighted. Even l'shitatam, you know what? That there should be a differentiation between boys' education and girls' education in this regard. Even l'shitat that that's correct. Those women are going to be the mothers of boys. And the subliminal messages that come, which I think is what's fueling and driving all of this, predominantly comes from the mothers. It comes from the mothers. So even if you want to take that shita in education, it's sooner or later going to boomerang on you, even on your own son, forget about on your daughter. So I, of course, believe that women should be learning for women and women should be learning for daughters, and that on that book, we can debate curriculum, but I'm speaking as a concept. But a few of the shita time, I think, is short-sighted, and I think, therefore, even in communities where there is that divide and there is that distinction, I still think that everything that I've mentioned until now is an important message. 2 minutes. Perfect. Okay, not five, but two. Questions? Not perfect if there are none.
Well, I have some questions. I'd like to speak to what you said. I have some daughter who is working in Shabbat, who attended a wonderful seminary in Israel, and she said that there was one of her campers who approached her this past week and was asking her a religious question or a topic question or a lovely question in terms of why